Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KBOO program all about books and the people who write them. I'm your host this week, Ken Jones. On today's show, our guest is Jackie Shannon Hollis, author of the new memoir, This Particular Happiness, A Childless Love Story, from Portland's Forest Avenue Press, in conversation with Liz Scott, author of the memoir, This Never Happened. Jackie's short fiction and essays have appeared in The Sun, Rosebud, Inkwell, High Desert Journal, Voicecatcher, Nailed, and Slice Magazine. A lifelong Oregonian, she teaches writing classes for people experiencing homelessness and other hardships. Together with her husband, Bill, Jackie leads workshops on communication, conflict management, and creating successful relationships. She also co-hosted Neurotic Tornado, a podcast about relationships and the beautiful messiness of being together. Liz Scott is a writer and a practicing psychologist in Portland. Her work has appeared in the MacGuffin, New Stone Circle, and Lake Effect, among other journals, and she was a guest on Between the Covers back in April. In the words of Cheryl Strayed, Jackie Shannon Hollis's This Particular Happiness is a gloriously wise book about one woman's unexpected path to becoming. Let's join Jackie and Liz as they talk about this particular happiness, growing up in small towns, families, especially mothers and children, identity, trauma, defying cultural expectations, relationships, marriage, memory, and the things we do for love.
Oh, Jackie, it's so nice to be here with you.
And me with you. We've been talking about getting together,
here we are. And you've written such a gorgeous book. I'm so happy to be talking to you about it and so excited for you. So first of all, how are you doing?
With just this 2.5 weeks
happening.
Left.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I went through sort of the stressful high anxiety period. And after I recorded the audio version of the book, everything calmed down, and it's like, oh, this is the fun part of actually getting to go share it. And hearing the book as a whole was, I felt relieved that I liked it.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah. And it's so great that you're in a space where you're feeling like you want to enjoy this moment. It's such an amazing moment.
Yeah,
so soak it all in. So your title, it strikes me, so This Particular Happiness, the subtitle is A Childless Love Story, and it strikes me that that word love does a lot of work in that subtitle.
Yes,
and I wonder
does.
If you could talk about that.
Yeah, that's, I like that question. At first glance, it would look like, and when you read the description of the book, that it would be about the love between my husband, Bill, and I, and our decision and process around being childless. I wanted children, and he didn't. Well, I went back and forth between wanting children and periods of times where I didn't want them, but we struggled with that. And so at first glance, it looks like this is about that, the love between us that held us together through it. But there are all a whole lot of other threads of love that go throughout that love between my parents, my mom and I, my father and I, my sisters, just all of my siblings, the place that I come from, Condon, over on the east side of Oregon, and friendship, and the love of all the children who came into my life in the absence of children of my own.
Yes, there's just love infused throughout this whole book. So that's such a lovely, lovely thing.
Could I just say one other thing about that? So Laura Stanfall, my publisher, and I really, we talked a lot about what would be the sort of that subtitle that would reflect the book. And I'm just really happy that just to hear you say, oh, this is what you picked up from it.
Right, exactly. And just speaking of Condon, I think one of the things that our books have in common is that they're firmly located in place. And so I wonder what you can say about how the particular place you were raised formed you.
Well, you know, it is interesting because I really do think that so much about your book, and they're very different places.
Very different places. Couldn't be more different.
And in some ways, you know, that, so there's sort of that difference between city and country. I was raised in a town that had, well, at the time there were around 1,300 people, 1,000 people. It's even smaller than that now, on a ranch that my great-grandfather homesteaded in the late 1800s. And that history, whatever history that also came before that, is just imbued in the place, the stories of family. And then a small community where we were just very much wrapped up in that, and it was wrapped around us as a family. And part of my story is that everyone that I knew, all the mothers, all the parents, the women that I knew had children.
Right.
And that was just this ongoing expectation. So the land, the people, the sense of community.
Right.
Yeah. So I'd be curious for you, like, what would you say?
It's so different, but there was kind of the opposite of all of that. There was not a strong sense of community. We were all kind of on our own as kids. Yeah. We were really like feral, even though we came from a lot of privilege and there was a lot of a wealth around us. There was a kind of emotional paucity, I would say, and our families were mostly all messed up, and so very, very, very different. But I do think that had a profound impact on me, for sure.
Yeah, I think no matter where we come from, even if it's moving around a lot, it becomes our story.
Right.
It forms and shapes us in different ways. My husband moved a lot as a child, and that shaped him in particular ways. And I was in one place for my entire childhood, and that shaped me in different ways.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think both of your parents have died. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Do you think you could have written or published this book when they were alive?
My parents are pretty unique as parents go for people writing memoir. When I first started writing, I wrote a book about having been sexually assaulted when I was a college student. And both of them read that. It was not very well written, but I talked about family and that. And it was hard for them, but they read it and supported me. Dad died in 2004 before I even had anything published. Yes, it would have been before I had any short stories published. And then Mom died in 2014. In those intervening years, she asked to read everything I wrote and surprised me, because some of the things I wrote, she was in it. And she, despite her complicated ways, had a sense of that she was complicated. She knew that about herself. I'm a little mixed. I mean, part of me is, on one hand, maybe relieved because there's a lot of attention in the community about the book.
I bet.
And it's incredible how excited the town is. And I'm just blown away by it. And I'm a little bit nervous because it's a really personal story. And I do talk about my family. I talk about my dad's drinking and about the relationship, the dance that my mom and I did back and forth.
Right. Yeah. Have your siblings read it?
Yes.
They have?
Mm-hmm.
And any concerns?
No, I say that kind of, my voice gets a little shaky. No. my siblings are pretty also, they're just very respectful. We all are of each other in certain areas about the things that we pursue. They see this as my story. They haven't questioned or challenged really anything in it, other than my brother said, I had originally had a pickup that's in that. I had said it was a 1948 International. And he said, no, it's a 1956 Chevy. And I was like, seriously? All these years I've had in my mind
Isn't that funny?
And so there were some small corrections around that. They are all also enthusiastic and proud, and they're all way more private than I am, especially my two brothers and one sister. And so I'm going into this with an awareness of the gift they're giving me by letting me share our story.
Absolutely, because everybody does have a different version of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of people are not happy about having that out there in the open. So, great.
Yeah. Can I ask you?
Yes.
I imagine the answer in terms of your parents.
My parents both died, and I could not have published it while they were alive, especially my mother, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty unflinching book, and yes. She was so infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been needlessly unkind.
Yeah. Well, so. When I think about your book, which I loved, I mean, my thought is that she did not have that level of self-awareness
right.
that, you know, I think so many mothers, parents, our relationships with them are all complicated, but yours was a particularly challenging
yes.
relationship.
Yeah. So, no, I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So another thing I think we have in common that we both address in our books is what I would call being boy crazy teenagers, young women, and mm-hmm. sort of not so young women.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
And so what do you know about how that came to be for you? I want to ask this too before I forget. Do you think like all young women are like, are we unusual?
No, I don't think we're unusual. I think that we, for a long time, we didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
There have been a number of women who, in me telling some of my story, have said, oh, raised their hand, me too, in terms of having been what my therapist told me to call sexually active rather than promiscuous.
Okay.
Or slut.
Okay, fine. I'll take that too. I'll accept that.
I think, you know, our generations were ones where there was so much shame and secretiveness around our own sexuality. So there was just that part of it that there was this thing that we kept very underground and we didn't understand and no one was helping us understand it.
Yeah.
I think that my own experience, my own activity had some to do with having a father who drank and was absent. His drinking took him away. And also I had an older brother who I adored who was just old enough that I can remember the pain of him stepping away from the family at a certain point. And I just felt I wanted boys' attention, and I thought that's what you were supposed to do to be valued.
Right. Yeah. I think so, too. And again, for very different reasons, but I think the absence of the male figure, I mean, that definitely informed my craving, really, for that kind of attention. And it was the only thing that mattered to me, really. It was very sad when I look back on it.
Yeah. I think about that, too, just how much time and energy I spent externally focused on how can I get that attention. The charge and excitement of that, the quickly becoming bored with it, turning my attention elsewhere again, and just trying to fill up something that wasn't going to come from the outside.
Exactly. So I want to ask you about parental approval because that and the need and criticism, because that feels like a really central sort of thread in this whole decision-making process that you went through, all the back and forth about it. I mean, to me, your mother was pretty, what's the best way to say it? I mean, she let her opinions be known pretty clearly, and it seemed like that had a pretty strong effect on you.
Yes.
And so I wonder about your process of separating out what they expected of you and what approval they were going to give or not give from your own checking in with yourself and what you wanted.
Well, the ideal parent situation is where our response to a child is when a child expresses their feelings, the parent, or is having a feeling of anger or sadness, the parent acknowledges that and helps them put a name to it.
Yes.
That's, you know, you're feeling sad and helps you even identify it in your body. My mom had her own family history that informed how she was, that I think took her far off of being able to clearly and directly understand what her own feelings were. And to be afraid of those, to be afraid maybe of intense emotions other than her own.
Yeah.
And so I learned kind of ways to dodge that by being pleasing and by looking outside and figuring, reading the field of other people's faces, body reactions, tones of voice, try to figure out what is it they want from me. And so that was, you know, that's sort of in the small immediate picture. But then in the bigger picture, I think there's, was this expectation around who you become.
Yes.
And I want you to be happy. I want you to have children. I want you to get a college education. And for me, part of maturing and growing up was and still is in a lot of ways. I'm 61, but I think this is still, it's an ongoing project.
Absolutely.
looking inside and saying, where is this reaction coming from? Where is whatever the drive I have coming from? Is it what I want, or is there some out there should, must do coming in at me that's pushing me and pressuring me?
How do you answer that question for yourself? Which is it?
Well, I mean, I do quite a lot of body check-in.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine myself in the future. How am I going to feel about this decision? And I also just, sometimes you just have to, okay, I'm going in this direction,
right,
and let's see how it feels.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I think that's really true. It's kind of a shift from an outward external locus of control to an internal locus of control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I always think of I use this example with clients a lot. I think of a physics where when the weight of an object is in the center, it's more stable.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's
good. And if the weight is more on the edge, it's kind of tippy.
Uh-huh.
And you're always like, what do you want from me? What do you want from me?
Uh-huh.
You know, are you happy with me?
Yeah.
Are you happy with me? So,
do you ever do that as a visual? I mean, just sort of imagining, like visualizing that as kind of pulling that, you know, where is that then?
I do that for myself.
That's good.
I try to, you know, make sure that, like, let's get the center of gravity firmly located in my center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
And so that the other voices become smaller, right?
Yeah.
So the other and probably the biggest theme to me is about dealing with loss.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember the book by Judith Viorst a million years ago called Necessary Losses?
Yes.
I think it came out in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I think of that book a lot and all the gajillion ways that we have to experience loss. And I often think that it's the central challenge of adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
in a way, because, you know, whatever path we take, there's a zillion paths we don't take.
Yes.
Any decision we make involves loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems to me that this book is really about making peace with this particular loss, or the process of making peace with it.
Uh-huh.
And so I wonder what you might say about that.
Well, first off, I want to say I love that you brought up Judith Viorst, because I don't know if you remember in the book, there's a particular moment when I was in college when my mom was quite, we were distant from each other because I had moved in with a much older man. She was very upset about that. And the ways that we were communicating were through letters that she would send to me.
Mm-hmm.
In one of those letters, I still have this letter, she sent me clippings. I don't remember what, didn't keep the clippings, but she wrote about Judith Viorst, an article that she'd read, and how what she was saying spoke to her. So I think mom also had this ongoing experience of loss because of, you know, she had chosen one path in life that ruled out other paths for her. And she had grief. She'd had a father who had had committed suicide when she was 16.
Oh, wow.
So there was, you know, quite a context of loss for her. For me, the writing this book was in part speaking about a loss that I hadn't really spoken about, which was I wanted children and I didn't have them. And I'd kept that wanting hidden in a lot of ways from most of the people in my life. I'm going to say this again, I think I said it earlier, but I had many long periods of time of being quite contented and happy and joyful with my choice.
Right.
But that, you know, the experience of loss, I really do like what you say. And I think, you know, this is reflected also in the book that there are these choices and there's a sadness that, you know, and I still feel this even today.
Of course.
Like, I can imagine another or several other kinds of lives. And this one I have is the one I'm choosing, But wow, there's so many other possibilities.
So many others. Yeah. And that's true for everybody, yeah. isn't it? I mean, it just feels like such a universal mm-hmm. theme. Like yeah. nobody gets away without having to contend with loss. Yeah. Nobody does.
Yeah.
And I think the more we can make peace with that challenge, the better. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're in this constant state of, you know, dis-ease.
Yeah, and dis-ease in the sense that I think a lot of people experience where they just won't choose.
Right.
And so they wander for a long time thinking they're going to find the thing, the right thing.
Right.
And I don't think I really don't think we very often know this path that I'm taking is going to be the right path. We just have to follow it be present in it. Yeah.
Well, right. And I think if you don't contend with loss and make peace with it, you might end up being bitter, as your
yes.
mother was concerned
uh-huh.
you might.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what path you take,
yeah.
that if you don't accept that all life involves loss, then that's where the bitterness lies,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And I wonder, too, about, you know, that you had that horrible sexual assault in college.
Mm-hmm.
What a terrible thing to go through. And I wonder how loss fits into that experience, too.
Mm-hmm. That probably the biggest part of the loss in that was the loss of my sense of innocence about life.
Right.
About being invincible. I had been a very brave girl up until then, and I actually continued to be after that, but I didn't realize, I didn't understand this experience that death can just happen. All of a sudden, I hadn't lost anyone. I had lost my grandmother, but that was a different sort of
sure.
of death. But that it can come suddenly from one moment to the next. And that changed me in a really deep way in terms of a sense of immediacy about life. And it didn't happen quickly. It took several years for that to really
right.
sort of land in me. So I think, you know, the loss of that, it took me a long time. I sort of lost myself during that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the after effects of sexual assault really ripple, and we don't know. I think I didn't know how much I'd been affected for years and years and years. I didn't want to be.
Right,
because that was that felt like a giving away of the power.
Right, right. What yeah. a terrible thing to go through. So I think I read somewhere that you might have a similar discomfort with the word brave as I do
yes.
in regard to writing
uh-huh.
your book. So
yeah.
tell me
yeah.
what your discomfort is.
Yeah. Well, people have said, and I think even some of the blurbs on the book say that this is, you know, that you're brave to have written this, or this is a brave memoir and brave story. And I don't feel like I'm going to step out and go tell this, and it's really scary for me, and but I'm going to do it anyway. It feels so necessary for me to speak of this, and that to also not have things be secretive. Speaking about the sexual assault, people would say, oh, you're really brave for speaking about that, or to have survived it. That had nothing to do with bravery.
Right.
I just happened to have survived.
Right.
It's such a confusing word to me in a way. I appreciate that people say that, and I, you know, it's not a criticism of the thought or the sentiment in it. It's just a bit of a confusion because I think I don't feel like doing this is brave. And I'm going to give you this comparison of, you know, when someone jumps someone has fallen into the subway pit. I don't know. I've never actually seen this. But, and someone jumps in to save them.
Right.
And they do save them. And they come out and they're like, you know, oh, you were so brave. And it's like, I didn't have any choice to do that. Now, I'm not comparing my, quote, bravery to that. But I do think that sense of it's automatic.
Right.
I wrote this story and it felt necessary for me to write it. And now it's out there. And I may feel like, wow, I was really brave when it's out there and people are asking
right.
me questions.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I didn't feel brave writing my book either. I'm getting a lot of that, oh, that's so brave. But I don't feel any shame about my mm-hmm. story and my history, so it doesn't feel like, oh, my God, this is going to be terribly scary
yes.
if I tell it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is there's this kind of implication of you're saying things you shouldn't be saying.
Yes, that's, oh yes, I'm really glad you said that, yeah. Yes.
That's funny to me. That just feels, that just kind of, I mean, I like you. I appreciate the sentiment behind it, but it just lands on me in a pretty funny way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there is a part of me that's like, ooh, maybe, and I think it goes back to that sort of the family history.
Right.
Also like, oh, we're not supposed to be talking about
these
things. And also, I even feel it in some sense about talking about my mom or my dad, my dad's drinking, or my relationship with my mom. I feel protective of them also because they weren't, that isn't just who they were, and that's not who they are in this story.
Mm-hmm.
There are many things,
oh,
as we all are. So, it's an interesting.
It really is, isn't it? Uh-huh. Yeah. So let's talk about some craft stuff, since we're writers.
Mm-hmm.
Your book also is not a continuous narrative. It's, it's a, what do you call that? Not
woven, braided.
Yes, okay, yes, that's good, yes. So did you write the chapters in order, in the order that they appear? How did you go about ordering them? What was that process like for you?
Well, that was quite a process. I originally wrote it in a mostly chronological format.
Hmm.
I mean, I wrote different pieces of it at different times and put them in, and the whole story was laid out chronologically. And I had an editor look at it, and we kept it the same. And then I went and queried agents.
Hmm.
And I got an agent, Rachel Sussman, who worked with me, and she said, I think this needs to have a different shape. And I don't think it should be chronological because I think there are pieces in here. And it's interesting because in the writing, this is exactly what had happened. I just hadn't laid it out this way. That as you're thinking about something in the present, there's something in the past, which is what memoir does. It's about memory.
Yes.
It triggers some memory that helps us either understand the present or the past, one way or the other.
Exactly, yeah.
And so let's find a way to link those. And so she worked me. As I did that, there became this other question about this third thread that began to be woven through the story, which wasn't in there at the time, which has to do with my husband, Bill.
Hmm.
And bringing in these sort of vignettes or seamlets that he had told me that I then share how they are in my own mind, which is about understanding him and why he didn't want children.
Mm-hmm.
And so weaving those three together for me really was exciting, and it opened the book up in a different way.
Absolutely, and I think that's the way memory works, right? I mean, it's not a continuous chronological experience.
Yeah.
It is very, very much the way our natural thought process goes.
Yeah.
And how did your husband have any resistance to your telling his story?
No, he loves it, and he is, if not more, as open as I am about. He's just a wide open, loving guy, and he really feels that our secrets are what keep us stuck.
Totally.
And the more that we can shine the light on them, the fewer areas remain hidden about what we need to know about ourselves.
Right.
He has read every draft of this book. He hasn't, other than factual things, he hasn't said, I don't want you to say that, or... You know, I also feel protective of him.
Of course.
But I frankly feel like I'm the one who comes across as more of the difficult, complicated person in this relationship.
Right. Well, we all are. what was the hardest part of this book to write?
Ooh. It was, I think, the hardest parts for me were writing about, there are two stories of loss, death, that are... in
right.
here. They're really important. They're the loss of children, not my own, and how to tell that and be, respectful of that's their parent's story and their story also.
Right.
And also that I still feel such great sadness about those.
Those are such heartbreaking stories.
Yeah.
Such heartbreaking stories, boy. So what was that? That was your agent you were talking about.
Yes.
And you had an editor probably going through this. What was that process like?
That's great. Well, I actually contracted with an editor, Don Raphael, when I thought I had this all done. That's about 4 or 5 drafts ago.
Right.
So she is the, helped me just look at a number of things. And that was a process of cutting out about, that was a, I cut out about 10,000 words at that point.
Wow.
And then I worked with Rachel Sussman, who actually we went out to the Big Five. This is one of those things, the Big Five publishers, and didn't get one. But I ended up, fortunately, wonderfully, with Laura Stanfell of Forest Avenue Press, which has been, you know, sometimes you just don't know when there are disappointments how what the gift that's going to walk in the door, and she was the gift that walked into the door. And it's been this really intimate, personal, joyful experience going through the publishing process with her. And then she had me edit out another 10,000 words.
Wow.
So what was originally 95,000 words is now 75,000. And that includes what I, the chapters, the pieces I added in, the Bill vignette.
Wow.
So, yeah,
wow.
It took on, it had many different
That's
shapes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask finally if there is a question or any questions that you wish somebody had asked or would ask you.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not sure if anyone has asked me this quite in this way, but there is one person in my life who has asked me when I've gone through anxiety about this. A woman named Mary Rex has said to me, let's just keep coming back to, why did you write this book?
It's such a good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's such a good question.
Yeah.
I actually had that on my list, and I forgot to ask you. but yeah. Why did you write it, and why now?
Mm-hmm. And why now? And I have been asked the why now in a sense, but I wrote this book. There are several pieces to it. One is I wanted to talk about relationships and all the many shapes of relationships and my sort of joy in digging into those. And I also wanted to talk about the things that we keep to ourselves hidden, our losses, our pains, our sadnesses, to just talk about them. And that creates a sense of connection to other people, both people who are reading, the conversations that come up as a result of it. So, yeah.
Mm. It's wonderful. Well, congratulations, Jackie. It's just a gorgeous book. It's really, really beautiful book.
Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
I that means a lot coming from you because I love your book.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Jackie.
You've been listening to Jackie Shannon Hollis, author of the new memoir, This Particular Happiness, A Childless Love Story from Portland's Forest Avenue Press, in conversation with Liz Scott, author of the memoir, This Never Happened. Jackie will be reading and signing books at Powell's City of Books in downtown Portland on Friday, October 4th, at 7:30 p.m. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KABU Community Radio. Many thanks to Jackie and Liz for visiting us at KABU, and to all of you for listening.